This is part two of a two-part series, so if you haven't heard part one of You Here, go back and catch up, then continue with this one. We'll carry over several themes and discussions from the previous installment. Previously on Points of Interest, I spoke with students about what it was like to be themselves in East Texas. I'm personally from here, so my opinions and perspectives differ from theirs. I've been searching into what it's like to be an outsider in this region, which evolved into other topics such as how pride affects behavior, and beliefs and personalities of children usually reflect those of who raised them. The term fake news even came up. To continue exploring this topic, I spoke to Scott from New Jersey, who, unlike the previous speakers, isn't a college student. He shares a different perspective on comfort, family, and even news. Coming up on Points of Interest, I'm your host, Emma Anderson.
It was funny because, like, where I grew up in New Jersey was very diverse in a lot of ways, but it was very segregated at the same time. Like, I grew up around a lot of different kinds of people, but they were all in their neighborhoods, and you didn't cross certain streets, you know, unless, say, you worked there. Like, I lived in the white sort of Irish end, obviously, and there was Aldo, who ran Aldo's Pizza. He was a black guy, and he was, you know, he was one of those guys who always looked like he was about 65, like, no matter how old he was, you know. And he would just sort of amble down the street. And we loved Aldo because he made good pizza and we liked him and he was a businessman. He ran, there was a Carvel ice cream and an Aldo's pizza that were just like a, like in a little side-by-side, you know, little parking lot kind of thing. Aldo could walk back and forth with impunity and nobody bothered. But if like another black dude walked, you know, and it's like, if we didn't know he was going to work for Aldo or like someplace down that way, it was just like, you just suddenly see people being like, you lost, you know, just... You could see that. Same thing happened to me. My brother moved to a neighborhood that was pretty much the Puerto Rican neighborhood. And when I would go to his house, like I would have an escort. Once I passed like a certain block, they would just kind of be like, somebody would sort of cross the street like, where are you going? It's like my brother's house. And they would walk to my brother's house with me, you know, made sure I get there. When he opened the door, it was just like, and they would wave and, you know, they would let me in. So... But it was this self-segregating, self-policing kind of thing. That's as deadly as the enforced segregation, as far as I'm concerned. You know, it made people, I don't know, just try to be, you know, like there was always a, wait, you got business here, Holmes? And it was just like, oh, do we have to do this every time you've met me? You know, it's like, for God's sake, you know, or like black dudes, like in the schoolyard next to the church where I grew up, it would just be like, you know, you just be like, what, you know, you don't walk through here, you know. And it's just, there would be fights like about this stuff. And it was just like, really? Are we really doing this? Like, just like every time? Like, do we have, you know? But, and even the churches, like there was St. Joe's Catholic Church, which was about half a mile up the street. And I went to St. Anthony's, excuse me, which was also a Catholic church. And my church was like all the white Irish and Italian people. And all the Puerto Rican and black people from that end of Trenton, like which, by which I mean the next block or two up, went to St. Joe's. So, you know, it just, we just all policed ourselves for some reason. And at the time, the funny thing was at the time it seemed fine. Like it was just how it was. Like we're just talking about this, like, yeah, it's fine. Like whatever, that's their neighborhood. There's no reason for me to go over there. And then I had a friend named Adolfo Torres, you know, who would come and play hockey with us. And people were just like, there's like a Puerto Rican kid playing hockey. And it's like, well, you know, maybe... they would like hockey if they played it. You know, it's like, perhaps, you know, it's okay, man. So, but people, they were like, you got a Puerto Rican friend. That's kind of cool. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. It's great. Like, it, you know, it didn't really hit me that, like that hard. It was just like, you know, the people were that, they weren't bugged out by it, but they were sort of surprised, you know, like when he saw, like when my brother came out and saw me sitting on the front step with Adolfo and later he's like, that's good. You got a, you know, you got a Puerto Rican friend. And I was like, I'm glad you approve. Thank you. You know, like, like, what are you doing? So, but yeah, I mean, like but that was the thing. It's like, ah, I see times are changing, but it's like, yeah, but it's, I'm of that age where you know, Archie Bunker was very much the guy. You know, he was everywhere when I was a kid. So he's still everywhere. He's just, you know, he's not everywhere in the more blue states, I suppose, like he used to be. So
wait, like
the comic what?
Archie.
No, Archie Bunker from All in the Family. Oh, that's right. You're like 4 years old. That's right. You don't remember this. Yeah, no, All in the Family was a show in the early 70s that sort of looked at social issues. And Archie Bunker is, you can look it up. Archie Bunker was a legendary sort of, you know, that sort of old school bigot white guy character who didn't realize he was a bigot. But like, you know, white was normal. You know, your woman stayed home. She didn't work. You know, guys didn't grow long hair. And, you know, women didn't want to go to college. You know, things like that where like the guy went to work in a man's job and, you know, and white was normal and everybody else was, you know, there was John and Black John, you know, and Italian John. It's like, if you weren't like Anglo white, like that wasn't normal, you know? So it's like, it's just that kind of thing. It's a show that varyingly seems funny to people and doesn't since it stopped. I mean, like it stopped running in like 1975 or something or 78 or something like that. But it's like over the years, people will actually look back on it and say it was funny because it was so poignant. And then it wasn't funny because he was a bigot. And then I go back to, well, it was funny because it's not funny, you know, and stuff like that. It's like, but in that very...
irony, but not irony.
Yeah, you know, but that's the point. It's like, I mean, Carol O'Connor was the guy who played Archie Bunker, and he was actually like the sweetest guy in the world, apparently. But, you know, he played this bigot who just, you know, like he just, and he didn't think he was a bigot. Like there's an episode where Sammy Davis Jr. shows up, and do you know who he is?
I'm assuming he's a black sports player.
No, he was a black entertainer.
Okay.
Yeah, there was somebody, like, he left a...
The Davis Jr. bit usually just sounds like sports to me. I don't know why.
Yeah, no, Sammy Davis Jr., he was... if you ever heard of the Rat Pack with, like, Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra,
yes.
Those guys, yeah. Well, he was the black guy in that group. And there was an episode where he shows up because he left, like, a briefcase in Archie's cab or something. And, you know, Archie says something like, you know, I always thought you were maybe the greatest credit to your race. You know, that's like, that's the kind of thing he would say. So which Sammy Davis Jr. is like, well, I'm sure you're doing well for yours too. Thank you. You know, so yes. So this, it's the sort of caustic racial humor at the time. So it is funny if you understand what the context is supposed to be, but a lot of people don't find it funny. So, but yeah, that guy was everywhere where I was growing up.
Are people too easily offended? This question is often brought up today. It seems like so many things could trigger someone into a rash reaction, although it's usually unintentional. I had never seen or heard anything about All in the Family until this point. I imagine I wouldn't care for it much considering the sort of humor Scott described and how it doesn't really appeal to my generation. I continued our conversation by bringing up Madison's loyalty to the idea that families and how a child is raised to think affects their opinions and tolerance of others.
Family is deadly. I'll tell you the truth. I give no quarter to loyalty when it comes to family. Now, I like my family, just for the record. I do. I have no problem with my family. They're all actually good people. They're very, if things happen, like if there was like an illness, like when my father got cancer or something, like everybody mobilizes quickly to do something, you know. We all work together really well. We all get along really well. We all handle emergencies very well. We're always there for each other. It's fine. I haven't seen my family in 5 years. And I know if I just called them right now and said, can I come back and stay with you for Christmas? They'd be like, yeah. Like they just, it wouldn't even be, a, you know, so. But anyway, I think family is good in the sense that it should give you the structure. It should give you the sort of initial socialization. But it does seem that family, it's not just here. I mean, you know, I come from a very family oriented kind of a, you know, background too. The Irish tend to be, you know, at least stereotypically large families, and everybody knows where everybody is all the time. And the other part of my family was Italian, which is very like, you know, you can't get rid of them. You know what I mean? It's like, they're always around. Like they're just always there. And so I think, you know, that kind of tight knitness is fine in terms of, you know, everybody being there for each other or knowing each other. But I think it does go a little too far in a lot of these places in the world. And I objectively down here, it does seem like that's It is different here. The pressure that I've heard some people say, you know, when they get, like how their mothers will sort of direct them to think a certain way, you know, or that, you know, guys have to be manly in a certain way. I'll tell you this, and this is not such a diversion as it might seem. Guys don't eat cookies here. And I didn't know that until a friend of mine, a female friend of mine, said, I love that you still eat cookies, you know, at like 44 or whatever I was at the time. And I said, what do you mean you love that I still eat cookies? They're delicious. Why wouldn't I? You know? And she said, well, guys your age don't eat cookies. And I, what do you mean guys might? What are you talking about? She said, guys your age don't eat cookies. Did you ever actually see a guy your age eat a cookie? And I suddenly flashed through my entire life and realized, no, unless they're with a little kid, you know, they don't eat cookies. They don't eat ice cream. They don't eat cake. They can eat donuts for some reason. That's like a sweet treat that guys my age can just gorge up on. But they can't eat cookies. And I was like, oh my God, you're right. And I said, why is that? She said, because it's like, that's like a little boy thing. It's, you know, like, you know, it's like just, it's a little too wimpy for guys to eat like cookies or a piece of cake. I got a piece of cake in a bar once in Greenville, as a matter of fact. And I can't tell you the looks I got sitting there at the bar eating a piece of cake because it was lemon cake. And I thought, I love lemon cake. So I wanted to get a piece. And everybody just kept looking at me like, that guy's eating cake. You know, it's like, yeah, I'm eating cake, which I made sure. I was just like, yeah, I've eaten cake. Like, I just really like, you know. So, and it's the same impulse that when I went to a bar, it was very country bar, and I asked them, like, what is your signature drink? And they told me it was full of, like, melon liqueur and raspberry, you know, flamboise and all this kind of stuff. Just very fancy, you know, girly drink, in other words. And I said, okay, I'll have one. And, like, they just, it was like, I might as well have just set off a bomb. Like, they were like, they were totally dazed. Like, it's very sweet. I'm like, yeah, I gathered that from the ingredients you just told me. And they're like, it's very colorful. And I'm like, I gathered that also from, you know, what you just told me. And they were like, okay, you sure you want one? I'm like, yeah, I'm sure I want one. So I'm sitting there at the bar drinking this thing. And I was this close, like, to just telling them, please put, like a stick of fruit and like a really fancy umbrella in it, you know, just because I wanted to really make it look really, really festive. So, but I stopped short of that one, but I sat there and drank it, and like people just, they didn't say anything, but there's this kind of about, you know, the place, they're sort of looking at me like, all right, maybe that guy's just trying to prove a point, you know, and I would have gotten a second one, except they were exceedingly sweet. It was like drinking like a, you know, like a can of nectar or something. So anyway, I know I'm a little off the topic from family, but like the point is that I think there is a lot of social pressure in a lot of areas. And here in Texas, it does seem to be a little more. Like back east, it was kind of a, people would have a social pressure in the sense that you should be a doctor or something, or you should do this. And then there was always this like loud fight in the family. And that was always like a rite of passage, like where the person just like fought for who they are. It's like, I don't want to do that. I want to be an architect or something. And then they went and, you know, kind of studied architecture for a couple of years, then regretted their decision, wished they had gone to medical school, made up with their parents. And that's how life moves on. Now you get married and have other kids. That's how it works back east. The system has been fine. It's been in place for years. We all know it's BS, but we do it anyway. Down here, it does seem a lot more sort of, you know, directed. I know I have friends down here who specifically were cut off from the family because of things they wrote, you know, as creative writers, and for not going to college where dad wanted her to go to college, you know. And it's alien to me to think that, you know, that dad would have been like, well, I'm not going to pay for any of your college because you're not going to the one I want you to go to study the thing I want you to study, to be the person I want you to be. It's like the life is mapped out in a way. That bugs me out. I have no idea about how that would happen because I cannot imagine anybody, including my parents, who I loved very much, you know, and were very good people and very good to me. I cannot imagine even them telling me, you're going to do this and that's how you're going to do it. I'd be like, no. And it just, like, I can't understand why people just sort of go with this social pressure. But it does, and I'm not trying to pick on Texans or Texas for this thing. I'm not, you know, I know it sounds like I'm bagging on people, but I'm not. You know, it's just, but I do notice the difference. It's very much more family directed. Like mom and dad seem to have a lot of say over when people get married, when they have children, when they start their careers, what kind of careers they start, than where I'm from. So it is something I've noticed. And I hope people don't take it as that same, like, I can call my brother a jerk, but you can't thing because I'm an outsider. And they're like, well, you're not from here. You don't have the right to say that. And it's like, I don't buy that. It's like, I live here. I pay taxes here. I'm a homeowner here. I've been here for years. Yeah. And I'm smart. So I can see, you know, I have eyes and ears and I understand how people work, you know, so I'm old enough to know that people interact with each other in different ways in different areas. It's different here for sure.
So like the whole, just do the, what is it like to be you here? Starting with where you're from / where you've been, and then what it's like to be here. You here. Here you.
Well, I'm from Trenton, New Jersey. Born and raised. You may have heard of it. You probably have not. Although a lot of famous people do seem to come from Trenton, like Antonin Scalia was from Trenton. And there's another, Sam Alito, Justice Alito, he's from Trenton. I think Dennis Rodman was from Trenton. Norman Schwarzkopf was from Trenton. You know, Eddie Kovacs was from Trenton. Zalman King was from Trenton. Softcore porn king. Proud there. Judith Light is from Trenton. The woman who was the mom on Who's the Boss, the blonde, you know. Matter of fact, my parents used to buy furniture from her parents because they owned a furniture store. And they always used to brag about their daughter, Judy, who was a actress. And I thought, like, that's great, whatever, you know, just like, who cares? And then suddenly she's on TV. I'm like, oh my God, she actually made it. So yeah, anyway, but no, that was my upbringing. Grew up in a Catholic environment, like everybody back in Trenton, New Jersey, half Irish, half Italian, like pretty much everybody in New Jersey at the time. Let's see, blue collar upbringing. My parents were both janitors. I didn't want to be. I wanted to go to college, and I don't think my parents, I don't think my dad really understood. My dad used to tell me Quick Check was hiring. Quick Check was a convenience store. And Dad used to say it all the time if I needed a job, Quick Check's hiring, because they were right up the street. And he couldn't figure out why I wanted to go to college and have a degree when I could just go down the street and work at Quick Check because they were hiring, you know, because Dad was that old school World War II guy. You know, they had me when they were much later. They had a bunch of kids and then they took like a decade off and then they had me. I was a nice little surprise package, you know, one February day in 1971. But anyway, so I grew up in that sort of very working class, hardworking, you know, get up in the morning, have a family, go to church on Sunday, you know, kind of thing, which was fine, but I just didn't want to do that. So I originally actually went to school to study criminal justice, have an associate's degree in it, but then realized I didn't want to be a detective. I wanted to be a movie detective, you know, because they're cooler. They have, you know, they have the nice suits and like women, you know, and all that. And I was like, I want to do that. You know, they solve interesting crimes. I didn't want to be an actual detective. So, I realized I wanted to be a movie detective, which meant I wanted to be kind of a writer. So then I went to film school, and then I realized that the thing I like about film was more documentary oriented. I didn't want to sort of write fiction, you know, and that sort of got me into news. So then I became a news reporter. And then after several years being a news reporter, I was married for a lot of that, got divorced, thought half a country between the two of us would be a good idea, moved to Texas, and was freelancing, and then I found my job at the radio station. So now I'm in the broadcast journalism arts. So, but that's the nutshell version of that. As far as fitting in around here, I do not, but then I don't try very hard. I think when I first moved to Texas, I moved to Dallas, and I didn't like it much because it was I don't really like cities that much. You know, they're too big, they're too noisy. And Dallas is a very, how do I put it? Dallas is a, somebody once said Dallas is a winner's town. And I think that's a good way of putting Dallas. Like, people are very type A, you know, a lot of people in Dallas are, you know, sort of very type A. And I'm not, you know, so I didn't really fit in there. And one thing I've noticed is, then this is not a Texas thing. I've been around a lot of the country. I've lived in North Carolina. I've lived in Canada for a while. And I've seen a lot of other parts of the country and whatnot. And every place I've been, there's provincialism. And if you're not from there, you're never really from there. So that's not a unique to Texas thing. That wasn't a unique to Dallas thing. But I never really fit in because everybody was aware that I was not from here. And my personality definitely rubs people the wrong way. I can understand, right? And people are probably listening to this thinking, man, this guy's like, I want to smack this punk. Like, I mean, I can hear him saying that because it's just, I realize that I come off very, very aggressive to people here, and I'm not, you know me, you know, I can't imagine you think I'm an aggressive person, but I come off very aggressive because the way I say things tends to sound very blunt. And I, when I was teaching a writing class, I would start, every time I started a new incarnation of the class, I would tell people, I am not yelling. I am from New Jersey. This is how we talk. You have to understand this. I'm not yelling at you. But because the weather sucks back in the Northeast, you know, it's always, you have like 20, cumulatively across the whole 365 days a year, you have 20, 25 really good days. Otherwise, it's stinking hot, or it's muggy, or it's drippy and rainy, and it's humid and cold and windy. The climate just sucks in the Northeast. But I think that makes people funny. But it makes them funny in a very caustic way. You know, we're very sarcastic where I'm from. We swear an awful lot, you know. We swear every other word, which is, it's hard because I'm trying not to swear now, just in casual conversation. And down here, that it's very different. People have a much quieter, more gentle, internal kind of humor. You know what I mean? Like, it's a much drier, it's based more on sort of, I don't know, sort of a folksy wit as opposed to a harsh, critical sarcasm, you know? That's very different for me. That's actually been the hardest adjustment for me, is that people here are not funny in the way that I'm funny, you know, or they're not funny in the way that people where I'm from are funny, because people where I'm from are funny like Bill Burr or Louis C.K., you know, where there's this sort of blunt, caustic wit, you know, about the whole thing. There's a lot of swearing, like I said, but down here, people don't like to swear, and I seem very angry and manic to a lot of people a lot of the time. And it took me about 2 years to really adjust to the idea that the reason people down here think I am aggressive is because if they were to talk to me the way I talk in general, they're genuinely mad. You know, when Texans raise their voice or start swearing at you, they're actually ready to fight, you know, and I'm not. That's like, it's Tuesday for me, you know, it's like, so that's been the hardest adjustment. And as far as, say, meeting new people, because I don't know the culture down here, because I'm new to that sort of culture, I think if I had moved from New Jersey to Baltimore, it's still a northeastern area, I probably would have gotten along with the people a little better. You know, and it's not that I don't get along with people down here, but it's like I'm not close with anybody that I meet. It takes me a long time to get to know people. And Texans are very reserved compared to where I'm from, you know. And even just meeting new people, like every time I talk to my brother, for example, a couple times a year, my brother lives in Pennsylvania, and he will ask me, are you meeting any women? And every time I'm like, no, I'm not meeting any women. Where am I meeting these women? And he's like, well, I mean, you know, you're a single guy. I figured you'd meet some women. And it's like, no, because the women here are fundamentally different than the women where I'm from. The women here don't like guys like me, you know? And for the reason that I come off very aggressive, very assertive, you know, in a lot of ways, and which is hilarious to me because I am totally not that guy, you know. It's like, I'm just kind of like, yeah, okay, yeah, right, whatever, yeah, fine, great. It's just about everything. I'm just very sort of middle of the road and low key about all kinds of stuff. But I come off very sort of aggressive. And also, the thing is, what I've noticed, the other adjustment I've had to make down here is that the idea of me meeting a woman for a girlfriend purpose, women here seem to want to get married more than where I come from. You know, there's a difference here in how women approach relationships compared to where I'm from. It's a very subtle difference, but they kind of seem like they're built to want to find a husband a little bit more than where I'm from. And it's not that women where I'm from don't want to get married, but the idea of sort of dating around and seeing how things are going just seems to be a little more loose where I'm from. You know what I mean? And it's, you know, I never really ran into women in the Northeast who would say after one date, oh, okay, well, he's my boyfriend now. Whereas here, I've accidentally dated a couple of women that I didn't know I was dating because apparently they thought, because I went to lunch with them or something. And they're like, yo, we're seeing each other. And I'm like, no, I just went to lunch with you like last week. What are you talking about? So it's happened to me a couple of times. So, and again, I don't know whether that's really a Texas thing or a country thing or a South thing, or I just didn't pay attention to it in the Northeast in the same way. Maybe it's exactly the same where I'm from. I don't know. But, you know, it just, all I know is that the people here are a little quieter, a little more reserved. They tend to be a little more outwardly polite than where I'm from. People where I'm from just tend to tell you exactly what they think, right? To you all the time. It's very direct. It's very blunt. And here they don't really want to, I think people here don't want to be rude. I think that's the ultimate point I'm trying to make here, is people in Texas don't seem to want to be rude, and people in the Northeast don't care if we're rude. It's like, you'll get over it. You know, you'll either understand or you'll get over it. And if you don't, well, then one more Christmas present I won't be getting this year. Who cares? You know? So that, I think, is they've been the biggest adjustments. I think especially the humor, though, is my humor does not land well here. I say things and it's just, I get that sort of, did you ever put like a bow on a cat, like on a cat's head, like, you know, like the little ribbon bows that you stick on a present? You ever put one on like top of a cat's head and the cat just kind of like, he just sort of sinks and his eyes get big and it's like, it like he just pauses, like he has to reboot. And there's just like this 5 or 10 seconds of the cat just sitting there doing nothing. I get that expression from people all the time. They just sort of like, their face goes blank. They stare off into the distance like, and they just don't know what I mean. And then I have to sort of scramble to try to tell them I didn't, it was just a joke. It was just, it's fine. Everything's okay. But, you know, and they don't laugh. And I just, and for a while I really did think that Texans were utterly humorless. And I'm like, okay, they just have a very different, very, very different humor than me. So, but, you know, as Texans will say, they are funny. I've met funny Texans, but they're not funny in the same way. It's, you know, it's like the difference between, say, a Larry McMurtry and Bill Burr. You know, so imagine Larry McMurtry and Bill Burr trying to outfunny each other. It's who's, you know, my money's on Burr, obviously, but, you know, but yeah, I just, there are interesting subtle cultural differences. And I will say the other thing is the Italian food down here is not good. I mean, it's okay, but I come from an area of lots of Italians and it's like, the food is just dynamite. You know, the Italian food is good. I have found some okay to decent to, you know, fairly good Italian restaurants down here. I have not found like a killer Italian restaurant except in Arlington. Excuse me. Except in Arlington, right near the ballpark. And I don't remember the name of the place. It's this little hole in the wall in a strip mall that has like the red and white checkered tablecloths and everything. They have really, really, really great Italian food. Outside of that, I haven't found it down here. However, on the flip side, the Tex-Mex and the beef down here are sensational. Like, if you ate a burger back in Jersey, you'd be like, what's this crap? You know, like, it just, now compared to here, it just, the beef is way better here. And the Mexican is, Tex-Mex is way, way, way better here.
We talked about a lot how men don't eat cookies, how humor is different across the states, and how meeting new people is hard. Scott offers experience, thoughts, and comments on issues that college students have yet to even encounter in their lives. I certainly don't think about how men don't eat cookies. I brought up to Scott Tristan's point that he made in the previous episode about the phrase fake news, and how it affected how the students behaved and reacted to any sort of arguments in his school. Scott offered his own response from a news point of view that was of interest to me.
If there is one negative to, I think, communication in the world that the phrase fake news has lent, it's all the crappy leaders in the world, you know, like Duterte or somebody like that, like all these evil guys like Erdogan, you know, in Turkey or something. It's like now they've followed that same thing where it's like somebody says something they don't like and they just call it fake news. And as a person in the news, I can assure you, we are not making stuff up, but the problem is that's true, but people won't believe it. So what I think we have found out in the media, at least in this past year, is that it doesn't necessarily matter what the factual facts are. We are not programmed to be reasonable because we want to know the objective truth. We find ourselves in bubbles and we just stay in those bubbles. And right now, anything attacking President Trump, if you're on that side and you don't like it, you call it fake news. I cannot imagine that the left is not going to use the same tactic, just with other words. They're not going to call it fake news because that's like, I think the right has sort of put the copyright on the phrase fake news. I think the left is going to use the same exact concept at some point. The similarities, Texans are very proud to be from Texas and New Jerseyans are very proud to be from New Jersey. And everybody outside of those two states doesn't like either one of them. You know, everybody who like, when, I mean, Texans here, when I say I'm from Jersey, they kind of go, oh, okay. Like they just sort of accept it. And they're like, okay, which I think is Texan for dude, I'm sorry. Because other people around, if I say to a person from, say, Boston. You know, they're like, where are you from? And I say, Jersey. And they're like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, they'll say it like that. You know, Texans won't say that. They're much more polite. So people don't like New Jersey outside of New Jersey. And I think people outside of Texas don't like Texas. People down here have been very polite, very nice to me, very easygoing. You know, if you take care of yourself, if you just kind of do your own thing, if you don't bother anybody, Texans won't bother you.
If you don't bother anybody, nobody will bother you. I like this statement. I know it to be very true, considering I've spent all my life here in East Texas. Some people have yet to learn this, like our first speaker, Tristan, who likes to defend his beliefs a lot. In both parts of you, here, we explored from different perspectives what made each guest different, why they thought they stood out, and the other random things they learned living in East Texas. I, on the other hand, enjoyed learning about the flip side of this situation and how different places outside of Texas can be. Everybody has a story and an interest, and that's what brings us all together. I hope you can return to continue listening to Points of Interest. I'm your host, Emma Anderson.
Points of Interest is produced by KETR-FM in Commerce, Texas. The executive producer is Jared Knight. Support for this podcast comes from its listeners. Show your support by donating at KETR.org today.